Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for continuing to be with us. Thanks for continuing to help us celebrate our 11th anniversary of the Small Business Advocate Show, going all the way back to 1997. This week, 1997, we kicked things off. We've been rocking and rolling ever since, and we're glad you're with us still. Joan Pride has been with us not quite that long, but, you know, Joan, I think we're coming up on January. It'll be 10 years for you, won't it?
Boy, will it really?
I think so.
Wow.
I think that's right, yeah. It is right, yeah. And you know, I'm glad I got you so young, Joan, because you know, I wouldn't want you fading on me, you know.
Right.
Hey, Joan, the lead story today is in the Kiplinger Letter is one that that Barack Obama probably wishes weren't so. Tell us about it.
Well, we're saying that when he takes office, he will face the worst economy in decades, which leads me to say, why would he want this job?
Well, I keep thinking about that Dierks Bentley country music song that I've quoted on the show before.
I think about that all the time.
It's a great title. You know, the title of the song, and the song goes, basically the theme of the song is, I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was on 60 Minutes the other day. I've forgotten, what's the guy's name?
Steve Croft. I think he asked him, do you ever ask yourself, what have I gotten myself into? Yeah.
And I wanted him to say, yeah, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, he could have, you would think he could, he wanted to joke about that. But I think he probably was afraid to, because, you know, but in his eyes, couldn't you see in his eyes that he was thinking, I want to say, what was I thinking, just as a joke?
Yes. Absolutely.
But he couldn't say it. But everybody watching knew what he meant, though, I think.
Sure.
You can see it. One thing I think I like about Obama is...
Wait a minute. Whoa. You like something about him?
One thing I think I like about him is that he does have a twinkle in his eye.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And he does.
He
has a real good sense of humor.
Yeah.
I will tell you this. One of the things that I've learned about Abraham Lincoln, I know there's been a lot of inappropriate comparisons of him to Abraham Lincoln. You know, one day maybe that's justified, but I think now it's way over the top, and I hope he comes out and says that pretty soon. But one thing that I do think that I've learned about Abraham Lincoln is I've studied him somewhat and know somebody really well who's an expert on him, and that is Abraham Lincoln's sense of humor really sustained him in some tough times.
Yes. Yes.
And I suspect that maybe I'd like to see Obama keep that sense of humor as he deals with these issues. And I hope he can do that without sounding like he's, you know, he's being cavalier. But we need to figure out how to have a sense of humor about things, don't we?
Well, because if we don't laugh, we're going to cry.
That's exactly
<Very>
right.
<hard. laughs>
It's exactly right. We need to learn how to find a little mirth in some of this stuff. Well, the first part of what you're talking about, Joan, you guys continue to report to basically provide the evidence for that statement about what Obama will find is you're saying first quarter GDP of 2009 is going to be negative 2%.
Yes.
But,
now, that's actually good news because it follows a 4% drop in fourth quarter of 2008. So,
which is where we are right now.
Right. But...
And it's not 4%, Joan.
It's
almost 5.
It's still the wrong direction.
It's almost 5% you guys are predicting.
Well, I'm looking at 4 on the Kiplinger Letter, that's all.
Oh, okay. Well, I see what I'm seeing. Oh, I see 4. I see what you... Yeah, yeah. That was an old date, 4.9. Right. Yeah, I was looking at the wrong line there. But, yeah, 4%. So you know, one of my... Bill Dunkelberg was on the show yesterday, one of my economists, and chief economist for the NFIB, and... He said, you know, we've had all these years where retailers were saying, oh, woe is me, we're going to have a bad season, and they actually didn't. That wasn't the case.
Right.
He said, I think they're going to be right this time.
Yeah, I think so, too.
4% negative in the fourth quarter of any year is pretty ugly, Joan.
Boy, it sure is. It sure is.
And so that's going to be tough. And I think a lot of that's going to be driven by just a lot of it, not all of it, but a good bit of it's going to be driven by lack of credit availability.
I think so, too, yeah. Although, yeah. I guess it's supposed to be easing up fairly soon.
Yeah, I don't know about that. And of course, then you've got this other thing, Joan. It's not just the credit situation in terms of availability, but most Americans are already pretty highly leveraged. You know, they've already got, a lot of people have already got a second mortgage on their home, an equity line. They've already got credit cards maxed out.
That's right.
And so it's going to be an interesting time. This next item that you guys report this week, Joan, is very troubling, and that's the jobless number for next year.
That's right. We say expect 2 million jobs to disappear in 2009. Just disappear.
2 million jobs.
And that's not counting, you know, the auto industry if you know, the automakers go bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big number in 1 year.
Yeah.
Now we were creating in the heyday of the last expansion, Joan. Let's say 05 and 06, let's say, for example, maybe even probably 05 and 06. We were creating something like what 1.3 or 4 million jobs a year.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
As I remember, we were creating 30,000 jobs every 10 days or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And which is incredible. And those were really good jobs, too. Those weren't the 1990s jobs where people were working for companies that probably shouldn't have been created. Those were real jobs. But 2 million in 1 year, Joan, that's a big hit in 1 year.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So And you know, one of the things that concerns me, Joan, that I want to stick in here, mm-hmm. and what I've been trying to do is use my experience with these things and observing what I've seen in the past and what I'm seeing now after having been through you know, more than a handful of these in the last 40 years or so, these downturns that we're having, is what is the difference about how we're going to come out of these. And I think the credit story that we just mentioned, the credit, the leveraging of the consumer already and the lack of availability, I think is going to have an impact on small businesses' ability to be as much a part of this recovery. And I'll explain myself a little further when we come back after these messages. 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame. Joan Pryde is our guest. We'll be right back.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance need the cover.
Little Van Morrison bringing us back, ladies and gentlemen. One of my favorites, Moon Dance. I think Joan Pryde might even like that song. Joan, what do you think?
I do. I like that song.
That's one of the best ones. It's one of his best ones, I think, ever. That one and Brown Eyed Girl and what's the other one? A couple of others. He's done a lot of good songs, Van Morrison. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, 23 after the hour. Joan Pryde's my fellow disc jockey here today as we spin a few plates of wax for you and talk a little business. Joan, as we went to the break, I was talking about my thoughts on startups. You know, in the last couple of three, since early 80s, over about 20 years there, to say, you know, to the last recession of 2000-2001, a lot of the recovery of the economy came from startups, people starting small businesses and growing those businesses. I mean, look at all the people who started businesses out of adversity, the adversity of being downsized.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yours truly included, Joan.
Ah.
89 happened to me.
Wow.
But now the one thing that all of us were able to do was use existing credit availability, credit cards, equity in our homes, etc., to use that money to help capitalize and to blend with new customer revenue you know, one little bitty nickel at a time to grow our businesses. I'm going to be interested to watch to see if people being laid off, the 2 million you're talking about next year, if they're going to be able, where's the capital other than customer growth, capital customer revenue for their new businesses that they might start? Where's their capital going to come from?
Yeah.
If they're already maxed out on their credit cards and their credit lines with their house, if the card companies are already lowering their balance, their credit limits, which they're doing, where's their capital going to come from?
That's right.
Because
yeah.
banks don't make loans typically to startups without full collateral.
Yeah.
So. I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly here, folks. I'm just trying to point out where things are different.
Right.
And I think we need to pay attention to that. So Joan, not wanting to bring a problem to the table without a solution, that's something I think maybe we should look for from the government. Maybe from the SBA. That might be a program the SBA could offer, is some kind of seed money. They've had these microloans programs before that
right.
wind up getting phased out. That might be something to look for in the next year or so.
Yeah, that's right.
So something to think about. Joan, let's move down and talk about one of the things that you talked about on the page one here is infrastructure spending.
Yeah,
is going to spark a big fight. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, we think that the president-elect is going to want a lot more to stimulate the economy.
Roads and bridges and things like that?
Well, we just say Obama wants much more, including investments in alternative energy. We don't go into any more detail than that,
right.
So I don't know. But the GOP is saying it'll take too long. It won't be a good stimulus because I guess that, you know, it takes a long time for that to really be felt in the economy. But on the other hand, the Democrats say that the recession is going to be so long that some of this money will kick in and help the economy during the recession.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I think of infrastructure spending and hearing some of the people, especially Democrats, talk about it, when I hear them talk about that, I hear them spending more time talking about roads and bridges and, you know, when I think the classic infrastructure elements.
Right.
That's what I hear them talking about. And spending money on those things, so almost a New Deal kind of a solution. You know, that's what Roosevelt did to get people jobs. He created
exactly. yep.
CCC and all that, all those I've forgotten some of the other terms that they some of the other acronyms for different things that they had in those days, public works that they created in the government, printed money, basically
CCC.
Yeah, that was one of them. Yeah. And and so anyway, the but here's my question. In those days, people did a lot of manual labor on
right.
those jobs. We had people with shovels. We gave them shovels and gave them a job and told them to go to work. Americans getting laid off right now don't know how to pick up a shovel, most of them. They pick up the wrong end, you know.
Yeah, well,
and
they may have to learn in order to make some money.
Well, but they may not want to, though. My point is that I'm not sure that infrastructure thing will translate, never mind the timetable. I'm not sure it will translate to as many new job opportunities as they're thinking. That'll be interesting to watch too. Joan, talk to us about the deficit. Now, when over the last 6 or 7 years, I remember reporting that we had a deficit. I don't mean a deficit, I mean a national debt
right.
of $5 trillion.
Right.
But now. In during that period of time, the national debt has doubled, hasn't it?
Right, and the deficit, just the deficit, not the debt, not all the debt, but just the deficit, is going to be exceeding $1 trillion pretty soon.
Right, right. That's what the next year's budget is expected to do, I think.
Right.
But those deficits is what has accumulated that national debt, hasn't it? Going to take a quick break. We've got a few messages to tell you about right after these messages. We will be back with Joan Pryor. We've got more to come from the Kiplinger Letter. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
the Man, Talkers Magazine says, is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. And that first website, like our business, like our show, is 11 years old this week. And we thank you for all the time you've given us and the support you've given us and for all the good stuff that you do out there, small business owners. We appreciate it. You're the reason we do what we do. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, and by the way, Joan's got a 10-year anniversary with us coming up in just a couple of months. Joan, I want to move down and talk on this debt thing, the corporate, the national debt, $10 trillion. You really have to balance that against the national asset. See, that's something you don't hear a lot of people doing much. Is they wring their hands over the national debt. If the United States was a corporation, mm-hmm. we would probably be a takeover target for somebody. Really, you know, if the companies who are not very well leveraged, who have low debt and may be underperforming, are takeover targets for companies to go in and buy them up, make a takeover bid for them, and either take them over and improve their efficiency or bust them up and, you know, sell the pieces off and make a lot of money off that. So in terms of our national assets, we're not all that highly leveraged. If you look at it like you do a corporation. Now, but I do have to say, doubling your debt over 5-8 years, that's a pretty significant thing.
Yeah, not necessarily a good thing. That's right.
But I also will say that when times are tough, sometimes companies have to increase their balance, the debt on their balance sheet. And I think that's what we're doing right now. So I think we have to take that in stride. Joan, one thing that you guys reported that obviously has been one of the saviors. I mean, one of the things that's just been unbelievably important is the price of oil. Talk to us about that.
I still can't believe it myself. Price of oil, and in fact, we talk about the price of oil dropping here in the letter, but I think it's already been overtaken by further declines.
Right. No, it dipped below 50, I think, this week. And but it's back up a little bit now. But it's in the low 50s right now. That's almost $100 a barrel drop in what, 120 days?
But you know, I would like to know, the last time oil was $50 a barrel, what was the price of gasoline? And I venture to guess it was below $2.
What did I bought $1.94 yesterday.
Yeah, but that's not true around me really. It's still above $2 in some places, you know, $2.30, $2.40. So I want to know why it can come down when it goes up.
Taxes.
It goes up fast.
Taxes,
and when it comes down, it comes down pretty slow.
Communities have increased the taxes on gas everywhere.
I don't think that's the whole story.
That's part of it, though.
I think they're quick to raise it.
Well, you're getting ripped off, Joan. You should do something about this. I wouldn't
put
up with this if I were you.
I know.
But seriously, Joan, clearly the government's attitude and the steps that they took to foretell future sources clearly has made the oil prices collapse.
Yes.
And the good news, Joan, is that we no longer have a worry about inflation because of that. It's helped an awful lot on inflation. If we were still at $140 a barrel for oil, Joan, we would be in big trouble in this economy
right now. Well, I think a lot of the story is also demand. Demand has really fallen off sharply.
Demand generation. Destruction. Demand destruction is what I meant.
Right.
The opposite of demand generation. Demand destruction is, yes, we've had that too. It's been a little bit of a combination of things, but you know, I don't think it's going to stay at $50 forever, but I sure do like it now.
Oh, definitely. I'll enjoy it while it lasts.
Absolutely. Joan, let's move over. Even China has gotten, countries all over the world are stepping up to intervene in their economies, aren't they?
They sure are, which is interesting because we kind of need the whole world to sort of step up and try to combat this
say here that China needs to intervene in their economy to keep their economy from slipping below. But it's interesting to see how, and Jonah, that's got this clearly. I'm really trying to identify the unprecedented things that we're seeing in this economy, the global economy, and that's one of them, isn't it? the way the countries, the governments have acted in concert. That's unprecedented, and also probably, Joan, some fodder for conspiratorialists.
Could
take a quick break. We got 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. We got a lot more to come right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. And Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor for the Kiplinger Editors. And their website is Small Business. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Their website is Kiplinger.com, right? Right, Joan? Two different websites, completely.
Right.
Kiplinger's website, folks, Kiplinger.com. And of course, they've got the outstanding flagship letter, which they have been publishing since 1923. And it's the letter that Joan and I work off of every week, publish it every week. And then we've got the four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture, and the biofuels letter. I need to subscribe to that, Joan. I don't get that. I wish I had that.
Oh, wow. I'll have to work on that.
Would you work on that? What you guys have been talking about lately for biofuels and how that's changed over the last 9 years or so. And then, of course, they got this monthly magazine thing, right, Joan?
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Outstanding. I've been hearing everywhere I go, I see you, that magazine being quoted more and more.
That's great. That's what we like to hear.
I've seen it quite a bit lately, and so congratulations on that. And, of course, what's that phone number?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask him for that 30-day free trial. Joan,
right.
Let's move down and talk about business costs. There's a section there at the bottom of page 2 where you guys predict that your charges for banking services increase significantly.
Well, I guess banks have to make it up somewhere, and they're going to make it up on the backs of consumers and small companies that, as we were talking about, rely on credit cards to finance their operations.
Right.
So that's going to be difficult.
There are a couple of issues here, I think, Joan, that's going to create this. Number one, fewer banks mean less competition.
Well, that's true.
And we're going to have fewer banks.
Yeah.
And where there are fewer banks, like anything, that when the supply goes down, it costs more. The demand costs a little bit more.
Right.
The other thing, Joan, is a lot of these banks, even though they didn't have the subprime mortgages on their books, many of them created those and upstreamed them to the securitizers.
That's right.
So my point is, for a number of years, they all had mortgage companies of their own that was originating these mortgages, and they made a lot of money. Oh, yeah. They made a lot of money in their mortgage houses that were nothing more than originators.
Ah.
And they didn't have a mortgage on their books, but they made the fees.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to be looking for ways to make those fees back up.
I see.
They're also, you guys point out that they're going to have increased federal deposit insurance fees because of the higher guarantee, right?
Well... PBGC fees?
The federal deposit insurance fees.
Oh, okay, yes.
They're going to have that, you know, the $250,000 now instead of $100,000. They're going to have a little higher fee on because of that, and so that's another expense they're going to have to make up. Joan, another thing, all these companies that go bankrupt, like when United went bankrupt, now we're talking about PBGC. Tell the audience what that is.
The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. That's the federal agency that if your company's pension goes belly up, they take it over. So they'll still be receiving payments.
Exactly. So that's not banking. That's separate from banking, but the banking subject we were just having.
Right.
But it's something, and that that group is underfunded, Joan, for the potential exposure that they've got down the pike, right?
That's right.
So that money's going to have to come from somewhere. If there were if any of these big three go bankrupt, Joan, those pensions obligations would be handed over to this government agency, wouldn't it?
Exactly, that's right. Yeah.
So that's going to be part of the bailout element that'll have to be taken into consideration. And I'm glad I'm not doing the government's budget right now, because I don't know if it could be. I don't know how it could be calculated. Joan, President-elect Obama is already calling on some pretty important people to advise him. And interestingly, they're from people from both sides of the aisle, aren't they?
That's right. And that should be no surprise. I think he had said that this was going to happen.
He's no dummy, is he, Joan?
No, I don't think he's
whether you agree with him, whether you agree with him or not, and that's one thing I've disagreed with him on many things, Joan, but you've never heard me disparage his intellect.
That's right.
He's a smart guy, and he's no dummy. And I'll tell you something else. He's a very, very savvy politician.
He sure seems that way.
And your what you report here this week is evidence of that. Talk to us about it.
Right. Well, we talk about who will, we say, have his ear when he takes over the Oval Office. And there are some names on here that people would expect, such as Senator Dick Durbin, who is the other Illinois senator who's a Democrat. But
right.
If you... For example, there's Senator Richard Lugar, who's a Republican from Indiana, and his friendship with Obama goes back quite a ways. He sort of became Obama's mentor, in a sense, on defense and foreign policy issues.
Richard Lugar, very level-headed, very steady guy.
Yes, right.
Nobody doesn't like – I don't know anybody who doesn't like Lugar. I mean, he's a good guy, statesman.
Right, exactly.
And that's on the Republican side. And then, of course, there are plenty of Democrats. But the interesting ones, Joan, are all the Clintonistas, as they say, who he seems to be calling on.
Well, you know, another connection to Lincoln. Lincoln gathered around him his enemies and his foes in his cabinet. And I guess Obama's going to do the same thing. I don't know.
You know what they say, Joan? You know, what do they say? Tell us.
Well, something about keeping your eye on your...
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Enemies closer, that's right.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I mean, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Like I said, I mean, he's a smart guy, and he's already looking forward to 2012. Now, hold on to that thought, Joan. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about some things that President-elect Obama will be working on when he takes office. And we're going to talk a little bit about energy and a couple of other things right after these messages. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with us. Joan is our guest. And Joan, one of the things you guys talk about this week in the Kiplinger letter are some of the things that President-elect Obama will come right out of the gates after inauguration working on. And let's talk about some of that. Debt rescue package. So what's that going to look like?
Well, that's something that they really need to get going on fast. You know, they want to make bank mergers easier, limit a lot of, you know, executive compensation type things such as golden parachutes. And they're still thinking about easing pension funding rules because, you know, they had tightened pension funding rules. And then, you know, the stock market crash hit and pensions are having to scramble to try to make up the losses.
Yep. Well, that's exactly right. And some of the things, though, that you're saying, you just said there, sounds to me like the government is going to show up inside the boardrooms.
Well, it's sure. I mean, yeah, and so that's trying to limit golden parachutes. Absolutely.
And that's how capitalism is changing, folks, in front of our eyes. Mortgages, Joan. They're going to step in. Are they going to change contracts, or how are they going to change mortgages?
That I don't know. We say his team is working on additional. Help struggling homeowners. And again, just to put all this in context, everything we're talking about right now is what can the president do by executive order on January 20th or 21st right away without waiting for Congress to come back and go into session. And so these are some of the things that he could do.
Mm-hmm. Emissions, Joan, we know he's going to want to try to do a cap and trade thing.
Okay, but again, that's what he could do right away on
right.
January 20th is issue an executive order to reverse EPA's blocking
right.
California's rules on cutting CO2 emissions.
Right, right. Did you hear that Robert Kennedy might be his EPA guy?
Robert Kennedy, really?
Yes.
Robert Kennedy, oh.
Yeah. I heard that. Joan. Talk about a nightmare. That guy is absolutely. I mean, he's a religious zealot when it comes to the environment. I mean, you can't have a guy like. I mean, that's anyway. That's we'll talk
okay,
about that later.
Because Kiplinger letter.
No. I'm talking about this. They know where I am.
Okay.
But that'll be coming up. Just look for that, folks. Joan, stem cells. That's another thing. He's going to undo that.
The ban on funding for embryonic stem cell research, which had been imposed by President Bush.
Yep.
These are things he can do without waiting for Congress.
He's also going to try to block leases on a third of a million acres of land in Utah, which if he does that, folks, watch gasoline prices. The day he signs that block of those leases, watch gas prices. That'll be an interesting. You'll be able to literally, Joan, I think you'll be able to watch gas prices react. To that. Now, I'm not saying that's a big source of oil, but just the attitude, just the step of taking of the drilling for oil will have an effect on oil prices, I think. And so we'll see.
Well,
Joan,
we'll see.
Talk to us about this natural gas boom. Over on page 4, you guys report that there's going to be a natural gas boom. Look,
we're saying within a year, which would be nice.
Wow.
Monumental natural gas. And this is interesting, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. I just don't think of them as being natural gas
And the good news, Joan, is natural gas is not as messy as oil is.
Exactly.
It's just harder to transport.
And prices have been going up and up and up for years now, so that should kind of stem the increase.
Could this mean, Joan, that we could start having more natural gas automobiles?
One would hope.
Who was it proposed that? Was that part of... Yeah, wasn't it?
I think it was. I think
yeah.
You're right.
So I mean, that seems to me like might be a pretty natural segue to other fuels, is to go to natural gas, and you know, because somehow they provided at gas stations, and we'd still be combustion engines,
right.
But maybe with different
right.
kinds of fuel. So that would be a good segue. We'll have to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. The cap and trade greenhouse gases, Joan. The You think it's going to come up by 2010? I think it'll be proposed next year, and they'll be working on it next year.
Yeah, they'll be working on it in 2009. We say it's the latest, so you might get lucky and get it next year, Jim.
Oh yeah, that'd be lucky.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is where they're going to try to take us back to 2000. I mean, to 1990 levels, folks, when the economy was about 40% as much as it is right now. So, gird your loins if that happens. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank
as
you,
always.
Jim.
And but you're not going to be here next.
Here next week.
You're not going to do Thanksgiving Day with me,
Helping
Joan?
Helping my mother-in-law cook
oh,
the turkey.
Oh, boy. Well, folks, I'll be here next Thursday, next Thanksgiving. Don't worry. I'm not going to leave you. See you in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Thanks, Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.